Okay. How was the race?
It was loud and hot like it is every year. I mean, I don't know.
The people. The cars aren't as loud as they were.
I don't know. They're still pretty loud. No. I mean,
they're pretty loud, but they're significantly quieter than they were when I was younger.
Okay, is that because you've lost your hearing as you've gotten older? Well played, sir.
Yeah, so just prepare to.
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect. Yeah.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth.
Whee!
I'm gonna be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
That
train is off the track.
Who doesn't love the bouncy castle?
Hitler.
Just prepare to be awash in unbeatable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to the Undebeatables, your semi-weekly Pacers podcast. Today is June 5th, 2016, and this is episode 186. Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, I'm your host, Joey Gafrida, the man behind the dials and season ticket holder. This show, we're covering the NBA Finals, Paul George in the news, and Nate McMillan. Joining me are all three of our analysts, coast to coast, like buttered toast. First from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., it's the doctor, Jason Triplett.
What is up, Pacers fans? What is up, Undebeatables? The band is back together. It's been a while. We're really not semi-weekly right now, we're more quasi-weekly. But either way, it's good to be back. Shout out to the chairman of the boards who just had a birthday yesterday.
Shout out.
With he and his lovely wife, Leslie, and good friends. And yeah, it's another rainy day in the district, but I'm ready to talk some basketball.
Just in response to that, I feel like this is a semi-weekly podcast that we put out whenever we want to. Particularly over the summer.
It's a semi-weekly podcast. Podcast that shows up quarterly. It's fine.
Exactly. Sure. From Indianapolis, Indiana, he's our in-house bartender, mixing up the drinks and the crappy jingles, John Colson.
What is up, Pacer Nation? I would like to shout out to Fingers Crossed this week. I'm now entering month three of my housing purchase. And as we speak now, by Thursday, I should have my first home. But I won't believe it until I have a title in my hand. So it's been a lot of things that got pushed back. So let's just cross our fingers, all of Pacer Nation, and hope this thing actually happens by Thursday. Because I think the sellers, the buyers, the realtors, the lenders, everybody's over it. Let's just get it done.
But correct me if I'm wrong here. The longer you go, the more stuff that gets fixed up for free for you.
Oh, it's been great for me, but eventually I feel like it's going to fall through. So let's get this thing done.
I feel like I need to temper your expectations a little bit. You know you're not getting a title, right?
Or whatever. What do I get? Do I get a lien, a moan, the keys?
Did you say a moan?
A loan?
Moan.
Lien?
Yes.
I don't know what I get.
Somebody
you,
has one
a,
of each.
You have a loan, the bank has a lien.
Do I get, what do I don't know what I'm doing.
You get a deed, don't
deed,
you?
Deed,
you
deed. I get a deed, and indeed, deed sir, I do. And then I'll get keys. Let's just keep your fingers crossed, Pacer Nation.
Sure.
Indeed.
Coming to you from Eugene, Oregon, out west, our enforcer and homeowner, John Harper.
What's going on, guys? Great to be back. Excited to talk about some Pacers and talk about the finals. Feels like it's been forever. Shout out, I'm sure everyone's heard. Muhammad Ali passed away. Sad news. Been some
sad shout out.
Sad shout out. But, I mean, really, when you think back on it, probably when he was diagnosed with Parkinson's 30 years ago, no one thought that he'd live to be 74. So,
sure.
We were lucky to get as much time with him as we had. Really, really an amazing guy. So, shout out, Mo.
Do want to also shout out to Memorial Day, the 100th race, Indianapolis 500 was run Colson, you were there. What was the scene on the ground? Was it quiet and cold?
No, it was loud and hot.
Loud and hot.
Yep, that's how the Indianapolis 500 runs. I think the last time I was there for an actual 500, I've been to a couple carb days, but it was probably 20 years before, and it was loud and hot then. So glad to know that nothing has changed. Shout out.
Some good racing. Did you enjoy that part of it?
Sure. It's just that basically cars fly by, and you don't really know what's going on, and suddenly you have to watch TV to know what's going on the ground. Like, I don't know. I get it. It's fun. It's hot and loud. This is Indiana, so I have to do it. But
you didn't do it for 20 years.
No, if you listen to it on the radio, you know what's going on. If you watch it on the ground floor, you have no idea what's happening.
Well, they're going by at 200 plus miles an hour.
That's what I'm saying. It's kind of a stupid thing to watch in person.
If you go and sit in the stands, you can see a lot more stuff.
Still not really that much stuff.
They do have an announcer who like tells you when people are
still pretty stupid thing to watch in person. Honestly, it's one of the worst things. It's basically like you're going to a really lame music concert where they just don't play music. You know, like it's just a bunch
Skrillex
of
was there.
No, but it's more the best seats in the house at the track. You can see half of the track, right? So it'd be like going to a concert and you could only hear half of the music, right? Like every other.
But they'd also have an announcer telling you what the other songs were, so it's fine.
I mean, there's essentially which sports on TV of any stripe are better, right? I mean, you're there for the crowd and you know the feeling, and it was the 100th running, which is pretty amazing. You can say you've been there, done that, so.
Sure, I can throw that stub up on the fridge. There you go. Shout out. I don't know why that's a shout out.
Shout out, ticket stub.
On the fridge.
On the fridge.
I like things on the fridge.
Okay.
We have a magnet collection of where we've been, so that's
it. It's not done.
Well, no, I mean, I'm trying to fix it because it got weird. Leave me alone.
It was fine. It wasn't weird until you made it weird.
I always make it weird, Jason.
That's what she said.
What are you drinking this week? Colson, I can see you're drinking some sort of upside down beer.
I think pregame was too long. I've already finished my Miller High Life. So I'm going to have to go get another beer probably in the middle of the pod. But yeah, I'm drinking the champagne.
Ooh, Miller High Life. Sexy.
Nice, nice. This week, I'm on the old granddad. I don't know.
A little granddad fizzy pop, granddad, huh?
No, nope. Fizzy pop just slows me down.
Straight up granddad.
It's going to be a good one.
There's a rock
in
there. Don't worry about that.
Pacer Nation.
What's good out east, JT?
I made myself a little Tanqueray and tonic. Gin. It's good. Tasted in my palate.
It's a good gentleman's drink.
I don't know why I'm drinking it.
Harper, what's good out west?
I am on, it's hot out here. It's in the mid-90s, so I'm on vodka tonic today.
Nice.
Well, we should probably talk about some basketball at some point. The conference finals have wrapped. Actually, the NBA finals have started, but the Western Conference finals were pretty interesting. The Eastern Conference finals... It's weird. I thought a little strange, but the Cavs put away the Raptors in a little bit longer fashion than I assumed, but put them away. What did you guys think about the Western Conference? Golden State, I'll talk about these, sure.
Just for a second, like the thing that really annoyed me about it, though, was that like as a Pacers fan, I felt like we should have beat Toronto, right?
Sure.
That Toronto-Miami series was just ugly. It looked like nobody wanted to win that thing. So you feel like if we'd have beat the Raptors, we probably could have beat the Heat too. And then all of a sudden, you got the Raptors playing terrible for the most part, going deep with the Cavs in the conference finals. I almost get Larry Bird's frustration. Almost.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking with my friend Matt the other day, and I was like, yeah, we basically could have easily made the Eastern Conference finals. Mm-hmm. I don't understand.
And gone deep in that series potentially.
Yeah.
I agree with you that we could have gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals, but the Cavs are better than every other team in the East. The fact that this went six was kind of frustrating. The Raptors played hard, but I think the Cavs could have played harder, and I think they're going to feel that going into the next round in the playoffs, because they didn't bring the intensity they needed to just sweep that team. They should have swept all the way to the finals.
Well, probably. I mean, Toronto probably got a little bit lucky catching when they did. I mean, Cleveland was one of the hottest shooting teams I've ever seen going into that series.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you're just not going to be able to keep up that clip forever. It's bound to start failing you a little bit. And it seems inevitable. And, you know, it's one of those things where, except unless you're the Warriors, that teams that sort of fall in love with the three-point ball that's going down that well forget how to not rely on it when it stops going down a little bit. So I think that Toronto caught them at the right time, and there's no reason to think that we wouldn't have too. Like I said, I'm not saying that we beat the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm not saying that, but it does seem like the road to the Eastern Conference Finals is a lot smoother than I would have thought.
Yeah. Well, and I do want to give credit to Toronto. Like, I thought they did some stuff defensively, and I thought they played really hard. And, you know, they earned a couple of those
In the two games that they won, Lowry and DeRozan played like all-stars, right? Yeah. Which they hadn't, basically, you know, save for a few games throughout the playoffs, yeah. And in that one game, they both scored over 30. I mean, you know.
Right.
Even if Cleveland's playing at their tip-top game, right, that's a hard game for them to win. And I thought that in both of their wins, they out-executed Cleveland down the stretch. And Dwayne Casey out-coached Tyronn Lue, I thought.
No, I agree with that. He had some hedging stuff. He used Patrick Patterson in...
his name's Tupac.
It's Tupac, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. God, even my parents know this, and I screwed up. No, you're right. Dwayne Casey deserves a lot of credit. Toronto deserves credit, but there was also another part of me that felt like the Cavs just need to be more focused, because they're way better than the rest of the East.
Yeah, and you know, LeBron said it the best. He's like, I've been in adverse situations, and this is not one of them.
When they tied 2-2, which is a huge dig,
which is huge just slap in the face to Toronto. And then they came out and they beat Toronto by 30 points in Game 5, and it was like, oh yeah, no, you guys are way better than them.
Yeah. And, you know, that's one of those things that on paper is probably fine if you're a Cavs fan, right? I mean, before game one of the finals started, you're thinking you probably don't want your guys to have too much rest, right?
Yeah, so, you want to have a little bit of,
right?
I guess adversity is not the right word, but you want to, you know, have to make sure you lace up your sneakers a little extra tight and are extra focused for a game. Remember what that like, because basically they hadn't had to play... Until game one of the finals, they hadn't had to play like a super tough competition for like 6 weeks. That's a long time to not have to play really high level basketball. Yeah. So. And it showed in game one, you know. Which, what are we talking about the finals now, or are we going to talk about Western Conference?
Well, I'd like to talk about the Western Conference finals. That was freaking bananas.
You mean one of the greatest series in NBA history?
Yeah, man.
Let's talk about that.
We should probably talk about that.
It's worth a mention.
So how did it go down? So OKC steals game one.
Impressively. Yeah.
Impressively steals game one on Golden State's floor.
Yeah, they took it.
Golden State punches back, wins pretty handily in game two. Steph Curry gets his mojo back. Then games three and four, the OKC Thunder just demolished the 73-win Golden State Warriors, winning both of those games by 20 points, right? Something like that?
Yep.
To go up 3-1, heading back to Golden State. Game 5 had a lead for much of the game, right?
And 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Golden State escapes. Go back to OKC for Game 6, and Game 6 was, like, epic. Game 6 was one of the... I actually didn't get to watch the game because I was out at a lake having fun, but by all accounts, one of the greatest NBA games ever.
It was, yeah. It was worth watching. You should still watch it.
It's on my league pass. It's definitely on my list of things to do, for sure. Did you watch it, Harper?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I watched maybe not every minute of that series, but close to it. This is an amazing series. I even more than the games 3 and 4 blowout, I was shocked that OKC was able to steal game one. Coming off a tough physical seven-game series against the Spurs, and then Golden State having had some rest, I thought for sure they win that game on their home court. Just an unbelievable statement. I hate that I feel like I have to give Billy Donovan credit here.
But I think you do.
Yeah, you definitely you got to do that.
I will say this. He's better than Scottie Brooks. How about that? If that's a compliment, then I just gave Billy Donovan a compliment.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give credit to that whole team. I thought that KD did some amazing things. He played like a super-duper star. Russell Westbrook did a great job of sort of taking a step back and letting KD be the super-duper star.
So there's the narrative, right? So that narrative really begins in the Spurs series after, what was it, the Game 4 loss? Where he, as he does, catches a ton of flack from the media and, who knows, maybe from his team about not spreading the wealth. And he looked like a different player. And they whooped up on the Spurs. They came out. They did a hell of a job for 4 games against the Warriors. Then what happened?
I don't know what happened. At some level, Klay Thompson happened. In Game 6, Klay Thompson happened, right?
Right. Well, so Game 5, though, is what you got to worry about, right? Like, you're up, what was it, 15 in the second half before they end up losing?
It was big.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Game 6, so, I mean, Game 6 was that way, I thought.
Yeah, well, Game 6 was that way as well. Okay. I mean, the Game 5, they were up big and lose that. Game 6, Klay Thompson, you're right. Klay Thompson wins this series for them.
He played well in Game 5, too. It was just he was the only reason they were in that game. It just happened to be losing effort.
Yeah.
We had 11 three-pointers in Game 6, is that right?
Yep.
Which is an NBA record.
That's insane. That's insane.
And what was in Game 5, he had 19 in the third quarter? 19 points, not three-pointers.
That would have been impressive.
I wouldn't put it past him, though.
At this point, nothing's going past him.
If anybody does it, they're going to be wearing a Warrior uniform, I can tell you that.
Well, but I think that the other thing that happened was OKC was shooting the ball extremely well games 1 through 5. And then their role players kind of tightened up a little bit. The trash that Deion Waiters was throwing up didn't go down as much. I thought that Roberson, however you pronounce it, this is like the new controversy in the NBA. He was making shots early in that series and then kind of stopped. And then I think that it was an effort thing, too. I thought that Golden State was just getting demolished on the boards games 1 through 5 or so, and then they, you know, picked it up.
Well, not only
definitely in game 7.
Not only on the glass, but also slow rotations off pick and rolls, and I mean, they were giving up easy layups. They couldn't control the pace. I mean, OKC definitely showed me something.
Totally.
But there is, it's difficult for me to even equate the team that I saw for 3 of those 4 first games with the team that won 73 games. That was not the same team.
No, they certainly didn't have the same swagger. You wonder if they were. Do you think that's a it's more they're worn out from chasing 73, or, I mean, you got to give OKC credit. Like, their length, I thought, caused tons of problems.
They bothered
for that. Yeah, and they were just grabbing Steph and Clay screens and stuff like that. And it's the playoffs, so they let you get away with it, right? So
this is all credit to OKC. And what's the credit to Golden State is they figured it out by the end of the series. It ended up being, what, one of 11 teams that's come back from 3-1? Like, 10, this team is extremely adaptable and extremely resilient. It's absolutely incredible. But I give a ton of credit to OKC for smashing them in the mouth up front. You just got to step on them because they figured out a way to come back, which is crazy.
So, I mean, for me, I think that Steph Curry played it down a lot. I think it was in game 2 where he jumped into the stands. His home crowd did nothing to pat his fall, and he had friggin' softball-sized lump on his elbow. He really didn't look comfortable. He really didn't look right for a couple games after that. And, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, it could easily have just been a shooting slump at the wrong time. But that team is just not the same without Steph Curry doing what he does. He does so many things. You know, the way that he flattens out defenses and distributes the ball, to say nothing of the way that he shoots the ball. Klay was carrying a lot of that weight and making the defense respect that deep shot. But that team, you can tell when Curry gets going, everybody feels it, mm-hmm, and gets on, mm-hmm, board. He really is just a huge emotional part of that team. And once he was sort of got himself right, it felt like he really took it out of the Thunder. That's what concerns me about the Thunder. As much as they showed me in those first four games, game five and six, especially game six, were fantastic. But man, they looked like they knew they weren't going to win game seven.
Well, but does that make Klay Thompson the best shooting guard in the league right now? And does, yes, that just, and
who's better than him?
I mean, I don't know.
I don't have anybody even in the same conversation. I mean, what do you got, DeMar DeRozan?
All right. So you've got the best shooting guard in the league, and then the MVP on the same team. Like, I don't know. It's pretty harsh to just put that all on OKC's plate. Like, they just got beat by a better team, right? And they were ahead.
What do you want them to do?
They probably should have won, but they just got beat by a better team.
Yeah, I mean, it was insane shot making for sure.
I guess when you look at the end of Game Seven, that felt like at some point they didn't look like they had championship in them.
Oh no, it was over by Game Six. They had a chance in five and in six, and once they didn't win both those games, that seven was.
Well, they came out and fought in, right, Game Seven. I thought they had a lead most of the game.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah, but I never believed it, and I don't think they believed it.
Wow. And certainly at the end, I mean, you know they were talking during the live broadcast about how bad the body language was on that team,
yeah,
during the game.
Yeah, yeah. Lots, I mean, of pointing fingers.
Exactly. And, yeah. For me, like I said, they showed me...
5 and 6, they thought they could win it.
They showed me a lot in those first four games. But it's hard for me to imagine a team that can really win a championship and win multiple championships, you know, comporting themselves like that on the court during Game 7. So,
well, this is a Rudy Tomjanovich situation. Never underestimate the heart of a champion, and yeah, the Thunder just haven't done it, but done it before. And so in those moments, you know, we see this all the time in the NBA, right? Like,
yep,
you kind of have to go through the fire first, and then,
yeah,
and then you're able to do it. And that team that OKC team has been in the playoffs a lot, but they haven't been healthy all the time. They haven't had all of the pieces.
This is really the first time that we've seen them since that finals run.
Yeah. Whatever. And I think it's like just super impressive, you know, that Golden State's down 3-1 and Steph's like, oh, that's cool. We're just going to, you know, we're a better team than this. We know it. We're going to come out and we're going to play better. And then that's what they did, you know, so.
Yeah.
I think we're looking at something special here, guys.
I think also of note, Kevin Durant not under contract next year, right?
Correct.
So he's going to join Scottie Brooks, the inferior coach, one would assume. Or he could join the Indiana Pacers, which
he could.
Those are the two most obvious things.
Sure.
Any other?
Or he could re-sign.
Why would he?
With OKC.
With those losers?
Yeah.
Does anybody think he's...
He could go to L.A.?
Oof.
I'm not sure why he would.
Yeah.
I think if he leaves, he would go to the Eastern Conference. For what Harper mentioned earlier, is you look at the Eastern Conference and you join him up with any other All-Star, and it's a much easier path to the finals.
John Wall's an All-Star, right?
John Wall's an All-Star.
Paul George PG's might an be All-Star. An All-Star.
There were some other All-Stars, right?
There are a few.
No, that's it. I think that's all I had.
Those are the only ones that matter.
We only
had
two.
Somehow the Eastern Conference only fielded three guys. It was very strange.
LeBron James, I think, might have made it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe. So, for me, it would be insane for him to leave OKC at this point with the run that they made in the playoffs this year.
Sure.
And
yeah.
with the salary
you're
cap.
You're a quarter away from making the finals, you know?
Right. Well, 12 failed quarters away from.
Sure.
You know? But with the salary cap doing what it's doing, he's not going to sign a Mega Max this year. That's not happening.
Yeah, he's going to sign a one-year
deal. He's going to sign a one-year deal. And with what OKC did, he's going to leave his options open, stay in OKC, sign a $20, $25 million deal, whatever it is that he's allowed to sign, and then see what happens next year. After next year, they're in real danger of losing him if they don't go deep. And if
the reason to stay in OKC is not only financial, but also – you know, you had all this success. They have great pieces to build around. The young guys on their team. I like Roberson. I think he does good things. I like that Cameron Payne kid who didn't play at all in the playoffs, but is going to get better. And then the other thing is Billy Donovan apparently is an NBA head coach, which we didn't know until the playoffs. And he now all of a sudden has figured things out. And so that bodes very well for them going into next year, right?
So I'm not ready to say that Billy Donovan is an awesome NBA head coach yet. I think that those guys have been together.
Jason just said he was an NBA coach, not an awesome one. Right. Like, he's legitimate. He can make. I thought he made some chess moves in the playoffs that earned him the right to be called an NBA coach.
Yeah, I think maybe not a top tier one. To now he knows how the game works at some
right.
Point.
And so
he may not be a top five coach, but he's. Legitimate,
so I'm
right?
not disagreeing with that, certainly. I mean, they've got two of the top five guys in the league. I don't really like Cameron Payne or Roberson or Ken or any of these other guys very much. I don't really think very much of that team outside of those two guys.
Really? So, you don't like Adams? You got to love Adams.
I mean, I love the way that – I love the energy that he brings to the game, but do I love Steven Adams? Not really.
Cantor.
I don't even like him coming off my bench.
You don't like Waiter?
Waiters.
He's not as good as his mouth would tell you he is.
Well, that's for certain true, but still pretty effective.
I mean, he's fine. He's okay. But I'm just saying, I don't really like the pieces.
Is he okay?
Oh, I saw it coming from like a mile away.
Sorry. They're nowhere near good enough to compete with the cast that the Warriors have. So if you're talking about cast, why wouldn't he after a year go to San Antonio or LA if they can sign a superstar this offseason?
Sure.
You know, they're going to
Pacers and play with Paul George and Mike Conley.
Going to have to have a great year next year. OKC, I guess is sort of my point. They're going to have a great year in order to keep him.
Well, I think, they pretty much have to make the finals, right?
You would think.
Yeah.
Which seems a tall task.
Seems a very tall task, but yeah, they're right there.
Speaking of the finals have started.
Yes. Mm.
The real NBA finals, as opposed to the ones you said the who said that the Western Conference finals.
Yeah.
The proxy finals that we just had.
Yeah.
So they've already started. Just to be clear. And looks like the Golden State Warriors took game one. And so game two is starting real soon, about 20 minutes local time. But who do you guys got? I want to hear predictions, Cavs or Warriors. And we'll start on the West Coast first, Mr. Harper.
So going into this series, I thought in order for the Cavs to have a chance to do this, they needed to do the games 1-3-5 thing. They had a bunch of they had more rest coming into game one. I thought they really needed to steal that game, and they did not do that. They didn't.
No.
Not only did they not do that, but they lost with the two best players on the opposing team having terrible games. They lost to the supporting cast of the Golden State Warriors. That is a bad sign. So I know that LeBron James and the Cavaliers are a very, very good team, and they're going to come back, and they're going to fight hard, and this is going to be a great series. But they did not show me anything to make me think that they could overcome this 73-win team. So I'm definitely picking the Warriors. I'll take them in six.
In C-Town.
Yeah, they're going to go into Cleveland and shut it down because that's how mean they are.
You spray champagne on their walls?
I'm sure they'll be nice enough to put up plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be a bad summer for the city of Cleveland. I mean, first of all, the Cavs are going to lose this series. I originally, before I saw game one, I picked it Warriors in seven. And I think I'll stick with that. I mean, I think LeBron is maybe the best basketball player on the planet. It's him or Steph. It's probably him right now, the way Steph is playing. And they're going to respond. Everybody is, woe is me, the Cavs. There's no way that they can stop Golden State. But they'll figure out something. But, yeah, it's going to be rough for Cleveland. They're going to lose to the Warriors, and then Donald Trump is going to burn their cities to the ground. So it's going to be – it was nice knowing you, Cleveland.
In that order?
It's been a good run. Well, yeah, just temporarily, that's how it's going to happen.
I see.
I mean, the RNC convention is what, end of July?
The rabble rousers are probably there, right?
Sure.
Colson, was that a drag race by your window?
Yeah, it was. I'm really interested. I've wanted the Cavs to win this one. I feel like, LeBron went back for the Cavs to win. I feel like this would be a fantastic storyline for LeBron to beat the greatest single season winning team of all time, add to his legend, make up for the fact that he's lost so many finals games. I don't know. I felt like this was just like the perfect storybook ending to LeBron's and Cleveland's legacy. Finally, when Cleveland wins a title, LeBron gets one in Cleveland. Terrible for Golden State's storybook ending, but they've already got a ring, so whatever. That's where I was going, but man, I just don't know how Cleveland wins this. I really want to say that they can pull this out in six, but I just don't see a path. I mean, basically we could go scratch and then Cleveland steal game five and then six, but like it's really hard. That would be Cleveland winning four games in a row against Golden State, and I just don't see any team in the league winning four games in a row.
Yeah, I thought Bill Simmons tweeted after they lost game one, then, okay, so now Cleveland has to win four of the next five against a 73-win team, or a team that's now won 80, whatever it is, games, 85 games, or they win a game seven in Golden State.
Which you saw what game seven was like in the last round.
Right.
So this is a really tall,
hard,
tall
it's hard
task.
To see a path. I'm rooting for LeBron and the Cavs just because, Cleveland's had such a rough go, and I've always respected LeBron.
But, are you talking about historically?
Yeah, historically in the sense that they've not won a championship in, 50 years or something like that.
We've never won a championship. Nice screw Cleveland.
The ABA, we own this shit.
ABA championships. We've also got...
This ain't the ABA. This isn't an ABA podcast.
Well, it's
and
a
also,
city.
Also, we've got NFL championships.
WNBA, mind you.
This ain't an NFL podcast either.
Cleveland's got none of those.
That's because God hates Cleveland. That's not our fault. Don't internalize that. I realized that I picked Cleveland in the preseason to win the finals over the Spurs. So I probably should have picked them, but
I think I picked.
It's really hard.
Even
to
now,
point.
I still can't do it.
I mean, let's say Cleveland comes out tonight and wins, because this is going
to
be put out after.
Tonight. Yeah,
they're
going to
win this.
Yeah, if this is going to come out after the game. Let's say Cleveland wins in Golden State tonight. We got a whole new series,
sure.
And I'm willing to talk about whatever you want. But if they lose the first two, it's I just can't find a path for this to work.
Well, I'm gonna take the Cavaliers.
Nice, Joey.
In six. That's what I
mean, it's
wanted.
It's got to be six.
But, so talk us into it. How does this work? This is LeBron James has 30, 10, and 10 every night.
Well, I mean, look, this is
I don't think that's enough.
This is showtime. This is it. They lost game one. This is LeBron James we talk about. He knows
50-12-12.
50-12-12-12. Like, he's going to do everything.
So my thing is that I just don't think that they can stop the Warriors from scoring. I don't see a path where Cleveland holds them under 110 in a game.
What's even more disconcerting is that the Cavs have failed to break 100 against this team in any of the games that they played against them this year. That's the terrifying thing.
They're
an electrifying offense when they want to be, though. Like, I mean, if they can get this thing humming, let's say they catch some rhythm.
They're just biting their
tongue. No. Let's say they catch some rhythm. You know, let's say they start shooting
75% from 3-point range, like they did in the first.
Against the Hawks. Okay. Like, if they do that, then now we've got.
As
long as Golden State decides to stop defending them, they should be in good shape.
Yes, okay. Perfect.
They set the NBA record for most threes in a game this postseason.
Sure. But the way that Colson phrased it was perfect. Is they can shoot like that, and then maybe they have a chance.
Right, exactly.
We've seen recently, Steph Curry not been himself. Klay Thompson not there every night. Has had some amazing games. But, you know, like I said, game one, you know, both those guys didn't play great. Like, it doesn't take, you know, too much for LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love to tear you guys, you know, tear whoever they're playing up.
Yeah, but I think that it's like they're playing, it's like they drop down a division, the Warriors, that is, against the defense that they're playing.
Yeah.
Like in game one, it was just, they had just had football fields of space.
Well, and that's
whereas against OKC, they didn't have, and they were like so shocked that people were that open. They're like, what? Back cut? What? Okay, I'll throw it there, and that's a layup.
And so
like,
that's
and that
the
just happened over and over and over again.
And that's how they bugged Steph and Klay. They were double teaming them out there. They're bringing a lot of pressure, but yeah, that's going to open up a lot of stuff under the basket.
Yeah.
And it was a really embarrassing Cleveland effort in the paint in that game, and they had more time to prepare. Like, that's.
But they've got a rookie head coach.
Coach Steve Kerr, and it's not off to a good start.
Yeah.
No, that's the other thing is Tyronn Lue is clearly overmatched in this situation.
I agree with that, but I think that this.
But maybe LeBron James is not.
Well, yeah, we saw this matchup last year, and this was with basically, you know, just LeBron, and he pulled out two games. So, you know.
Oh, I think that I'm not saying that the Warriors are going to sweep this at all. I think that Cleveland's going to make it really interesting. I just don't. It's hard for me to see a path where they can win four games.
Four of six.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just Cleveland's just got so much that it has to deal with. So the lineup that was working for them, at least on paper, in game one was the big lineup against Golden State, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
But I don't know that that's going to hold up. You know, Kevin, they're going to abuse Kevin Love. I mean, you saw what Steph Curry and Klay Thompson did to the OKC bigs. I mean, the second that you switch out there, the second they saw a Steven Adams or an Enes Kanter out near the three-point line, they just jacked it up. They didn't even think about it. They didn't do it. They just jacked it up. And they hit those shots at such a rate that it really limits what you can do defensively. And they're really going to expose Kevin Love. And, you know, now you're having the conversation, can he play in the fourth quarter again? And I just don't know what they do. What are they going to do, go small against Golden State?
I mean, the only hope that they have is that Golden State gets bored, right? Which kind of happened in game one. Like, they weren't even playing
that well. And maybe in the last series a little
bit. And they were up by 15. And they were like, God, this is just...
I just feel like they already got it out of their system like, in this
I need
playoffs.
My nemesis. Where's my nemesis? And then all of a sudden, the Cavs are, you know, tied and took the lead. And then Steve Kerr fucking smashes a clipboard and into shatters. And then Golden State was like, oh, yeah, okay, we're better than these guys. Let's start playing. So, it's
just so many things have to go right for them. And I maintain that the Warriors bench is still generally a little bit overrated, and they're probably going to lose some guys in the offseason to way too much money.
Sure.
But the confidence that they have playing together and the way that they feed off Steph. And one of those guys not going is Andre Iguodala. You know, him and Livingston just had an amazing game. AI did a great job on LeBron James. When he and Draymond were guarding him, I think he was like 2-9 or something and didn't go to the free throw line.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, as good as the Warriors is, they kind of match up good against this team especially, which is scary. Oh, totally.
The one thing Zach Lowe on his podcast with Jeff Van Gundy brought up that coming into the finals last year, Golden State was pretty fresh, and Andre Iguodala could give a, you know, a yeoman's effort on LeBron James. I mean, he won finals MVP, for Christ's sake. But this series, he's coming off of a 7-game set where he had to guard Kevin Durant the entire time. So sure. Maybe he doesn't hold up as well as he did last year, but still.
I'll give you that, but part of the Warrior strategy too, which works so well, and you could really see it in the OKC series late in the series, one of the things that they do really well is they use a deep bench rotation. They keep their guys fresh. They run you up and down the floor for three quarters, and then come the fourth quarter, they don't care if they're down. They are going for your jugular because they've got fresh guys. They know you're worn down from playing their pace.
Yep.
And so if they can, if Cleveland can't change the pace of this series, and part of the problem for me is Tyronn Lue wants to play faster. Yeah. They're not going to win that series with Tyronn Lue playing his team faster. They're going to lose. That's a foregone conclusion to me. That's the number one thing that he needs to change is take over the pace and slow things down a little bit so that he's got fresh legs in the fourth. Otherwise, Curry and Thompson are going to light him up for, you know, 30 by themselves in some fourth quarter.
Yep.
Well, gentlemen, I think we all agree. Cavs in six. Next topic. Let's bring it back home. Indiana Pacers have a player we mentioned earlier, Paul George. You may have heard of him from being amazing. He's on the cover of NBA 2K17, which is awesome.
What? Shout out.
So he's on the biggest.
Is he going to be on there with Kobe, too, his childhood idol, I think?
Is Kobe on there? They let him on there?
I heard a rumor that might be the case.
Maybe.
Also, this isn't like the Madden curse, right? No. Like,
that was my first thought, too. Yeah. I looked into it.
Is it? Okay, it's good. We're good. NBA 2K left.
So, listeners who don't know,
you get horrifically injured the season before you get on the thing.
Right. Yeah. The Madden curse. If you don't know, once you land on the cover of the Madden game, you either A, have a horrific injury, or play terrible, you basically you're done for your life. But NBA is fine.
But that's not fine. True. NBA 2K. No. Okay.
Good. You're all good.
All right. Well, then I'm all about this. Otherwise, I'd be like, let's burn the whole thing down.
So it's exciting, national exposure, and every time you break out the game to play with play with your buddies.
I'm just gonna make an assumption here. We've never had a Pacer be the cover of NBA 2K Live. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
That is freaking huge. That's a really big deal. I don't want us, any of us, to let this pass or to take advantage of the fact that we have this guy on our team. We've had great players, but this guy's a super, super duper star. Yeah. Now on the cover of, you know, video games.
That's right.
This is fantastic. Yeah.
This is the first superstar we've had.
Yep. Reggie Miller.
He was borderline.
Everybody's favorite Pacer.
Reggie Miller wasn't even a perennial all-star.
No, I agree.
He was a star, not a super duper star.
No. Jermaine O'Neal. All-star MVP
for 10 minutes
for a 2-year window.
Yep,
perennial all-star for 2 years.
Yeah,
well, for like 4.
I remember one commercial with him in it, and it was the ESPN commercial where he's got the trophy, the Larry O'Brien. I can't remember the rest of it, but I just remember seeing JO on TV and being like, wait, there's a Pacer,
this is big,
and they're seriously talking about us vying for a championship. This is nuts.
Sure. So outside of that, this is what we're looking at. This is fantastic. This is huge.
And what's really great is PG's doing his own promotions. I mean, he's on vacation in Europe. I think he was in Santorini or Mykonos, and he was rocking his own jersey at the beach. What?
maybe he can't afford to buy his own clothes. I mean, the NBA the team provides those for him.
Maybe he was just showing the Greek kid. Maybe he just got off the court. He was showing the Greek kids how it's done.
Sure.
Well, Jason, me Kenos don't much about this, but what I would say
oh,
is
no.
That,
oh, no.
Sometimes I wake up and only have my work shirt left and have to wear it. Okay. So maybe that's okay. What happened.
And let me ask you a question. When you go on vacation, do you pack your work shirts into your suitcase?
Okay, so you know I don't do that. So. You win.
But PG doesn't do his own packing. Come on.
Okay.
Sure.
Maybe that's
or his
the
own
case.
Laundry.
Maybe that's
so,
the case.
Yeah.
And I would get it if he was like a Tim Duncan type guy that wasn't really into style or anything like that. And so he has like, you know, four shirts and a tank top for the beach. He's like, oh, I don't have any tank tops. Oh, I'll just grab a jersey. But PG's very style conscious. So
I know, but all his clothes are so big because he's a massive human. And you got to fit okay. in this little suitcase. You're flying overseas. The jersey's just the most size appropriate thing to pack. It just, it's, okay. it's just.
I mean, it's great. It's definitely
just
good
really
beach
practical.
Wear. Yeah. And then he also was awarded with some things, right, Joey?
He was. He was second team All NBA, third team All NBA.
Third team
All NBA, which makes him basically third best shooting small forward
in all of those things.
Yes,
makes it, yeah, yes, all that's what
in the league, which is awesome, and second team All Defense, right?
Yep,
which yeah. is awesome.
So it makes him a top six forward in the league offensively, and defensively makes him a top. Four defensive forward.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very important things.
And I'll remind everyone, he did this in a season after he shattered his lower leg. Like, this is a really impressive comeback season.
Do they still do comeback player of the year?
Nope.
They don't do that anymore?
Nope.
No, because he would have won that thing hands down.
I think we just awarded it to him.
Yeah,
like that just happened. That's a new Undebeat Award specifically for.
We're just.
Season.
They should just change the name of the award to the Paul George Comeback Player of the Year Award because he should win it every year.
That.
Like beyond
comes
explanation.
Back from the offseason every year.
Yeah. So that's awesome. I'm super happy. It's a great year from Paul George. Yeah, All Star, All NBA, All Defense. Super duper star. Cover of your video games that the young people are playing. He's going to have a coach this year. Has a vision. Colson, I think you were not able to weigh in because you were having a fever dream of sorts. Last podcast. Where are you ringing on the Nate McMillan era?
I think Jason asked me a question last pod I was on. He said, how long is it going to be until you buy into the Nate McMillan era? And I said it would be at least through the offseason. I needed to see what Larry Bird did with the roster and how Nate dealt with those new players and whatever. I'm still very angry about losing Vogel. But Nate did a nice job in his press conference, I thought. Talking about a few things that I thought spoke to Bird, and I think a few things that spoke to me as a fan. One of those things was, you know, he talked about millennials. He talked about, you know, how you create accountability with the next generation. And that is, you know, part of what the gap is between coaches and players in this league on some level, and Bird
it's
has
always
said,
been like that.
Bird
though.
Is,
they're older people.
I know, but Bird. No, I understand. But Bird has sat around and said, you know, we're too soft on these kids, and da da da. And I think he was speaking to what Vogel was doing, and Nate has said, I'm gonna make sure that everybody respects the game and plays hard. And I'm not saying Vogel didn't ask for that stuff either. And I'm still skeptical that Nate is a new voice, but I get that Nate's saying the right things. And, you know, if he can get these folks a little bit more disciplined on some level and to get them to buy into playing hard, I'm fine with that. I still remain skeptical, but I feel like he's saying the right things.
So can I just speak to this millennial thing for just a second? So yeah. When people talk about millennials, and there's this sort of underlying narrative about how they're lazy and they're 30 and they're living at home, and it's impossible to motivate them because they don't believe in anything and blah, 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 right? This is the narrative that underlies this for Larry Bird. We're talking – these guys aren't that. These guys are a bunch of 20-year-old millionaires who work their butts off to accomplish something that is essentially as difficult as winning the lottery, which is playing in the National Basketball Association. So to think that you can treat them the same way that you treat an unemployed 25-year-old kid who's just started a job at U.S. Bank, like, that's not the same thing.
No, agreed. I think what they're trying to speak to is the digital age when they say millennial. I mean, I think there are ways.
I'm just concerned that that's not what they're saying.
Okay, because I would love it for them to be like, there's a different way that you interact with the younger generation because of, you know, I mean, texting people versus but
Nate McMillan,
you know, having interviews and whatever.
By any description, is more old school, right?
Oh yeah.
So this doesn't seem like a move in that direction at all. This seems much more like a regression to something that Larry Bird likes, which is a coach who's a hard ass for the sake of being a hard ass.
But it seems like one of the things that I think Nate put forth was that sort of his philosophy towards how coaches should, you know, conduct themselves has evolved over the last 2 or 3 years, where he got to be not the head coach. And so I think maybe he's seen the ways in which players react to certain types of motivation or something like that, and maybe has some ideas about better ways to do it than what Vogel was doing or what Bird would do, I guess.
I mean, my hope is that there's a middle ground there that where there is, you know, that will bear some fruit.
No,
but
dude,
my concern is that
I hope he makes those players go get their own switches.
And Nate is a super smart guy. If he sat in the background in the wings and watched and seen what has worked and hasn't worked with certain players and how to navigate those relationships, this could potentially be very fruitful.
I'm concerned that he's going to spend too much. I love Nate, right? My real concern is that I'm just afraid he's going to spend a lot of time listening to Larry, and that scares me.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a real concern. Also, did you catch all that stuff where Pritchard was one of the main reasons why this whole hire happened? I didn't catch that until later.
Yeah. Basically, again, Larry Bird and his quote-unquote coaching search said, "Hey Nate, do you like head coaching?" And Nate said, "Yeah, I mean, I did that before." And then instead of continuing to talk to Nate McMillan, Bird called Kevin Pritchard and said, "Nate apparently is a coach.
Have you
Can
ever
you
seen
tell
him
me
coach
about
before?
Him as a coach?" And then the sense that I got was that the interview of Nate McMillan was a conversation between he and Kevin Pritchard.
Right, where Kevin was like, "Yeah, I've worked with him before, it's cool."
Which is super.
I like him.
I mean, I have tons of issues with Bird right now and his coaching search and quote-unquote search. But that, to me, seems like the most ridiculous of all of these propositions, I guess. I don't know.
Also, I don't think we were very sure about this last time. It has been since reported that he didn't interview anyone else. That has been reported.
Zero individuals.
So Nate was like, "Hey, man, I'd love to do this." And he was like, "Well, let me go check some references." And he walks down the hall and knocks on Kevin Pritchard's door.
But did Nate even approach him?
I don't think that he did.
I don't know that he did. Which,
I'm skeptical that he's a different voice because he was already a voice in that locker room, but I suppose when you become the boss, you are a different voice. And so I'm hoping that that is the change enough that Bird needs and wants, and I hope that it's also the change in voice that the players want and need, and that this thing will go very well. That's on the table.
I'm confident it will be a different voice. I think Nate will do a great job with what he has. But it's unclear to me what's really being asked of him at this point in terms of style of play and all the other things that led Vogel into what ended up getting him fired, right? We were talking about at the beginning of last offseason which is, are we setting this guy up for failure by asking him to do something that not only he doesn't do well, but the roster doesn't work very well for either. So I'm just a little concerned that Nate's not in a great position to succeed, so I'm less concerned about the voice than what we're really asking of the man.
Did you see, did you hear Vogel go out with just a ton of grace and on the Vogel's Orlando the radio show? Yeah, Orlando radio show just basically that's being like, annoying. Hey, I'm on the exact same page as Bird always have been. You know, we were all trying to be up-tempo. We were all trying to get, you know, we were all trying to win games. I have no issue with him. We all left on good terms. And I'm going, man, you're super, super gracious on the way out the door when Bird basically was like, this dude was begging for his job.
And he's going to win 45 games with an up-tempo Orlando team next year, which is really going
to
be the kick.
So shout out to Vogel.
He's going
to
beat the Pacers 3 to 4 times, whatever, however many times.
And maybe in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah. What I would like to come out of this is that, so in the NFL, there's this thing called the Rooney Rule, which sort of it was implemented sort of to help African-American coaches get a shot, basically, because there's a lot of nepotism in the NFL, right? And but I would like to implement this in the NBA so that at least my general manager has to interview two other people.
What are you going to call the rule?
I don't know. I don't know.
Bird can have another rule named after him.
Yeah. The second Bird rule.
Bird rights.
The don't be a moron rule.
The Paul Tafar rule.
More than one person. It seems just stupid.
It's the way we've always done it. Yeah. That's how I got my job. How my dad got his job.
Joey, how many interviews did you do before you picked up the three of us?
Oh, you guys? More than so it was three per person for each position.
Wow.
And then you know, dozens and dozens of hours I interviewed my friends relentlessly. You know,
background research.
I you know, all those people thought you know, they were going out for drinks and we were having a quote unquote good time. No. You were interviewing for the show.
Being evaluated constantly.
Had notes on notes for days.
Lie videotaping. Detector tests.
Oh yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's super creepy, but whatever.
It's funny to me that Colton wanted to have a segment where we talked about Nate McMillan's vision, and I don't know that we'd even know what that is.
Well, no, I don't think it's up tempo necessarily. I mean, just knowing what he said was he wants to be more disciplined. He wants to run Miles Turner at center. He basically said that he's probably not going to bring very many people back that are up. He's trying to go get some free agents. Right. Like,
but this isn't Nate.
No,
that's not Nate doing
this. This is not his vision. This is whatever.
No, and he talks about right.
Yeah, and regardless, those are just words and empty and, generalizations.
Yeah. Are they platitudes?
And they're all basically reflections of Bird on some level at this point.
Right.
So now what we know is that Nate has agreed to kind of do what Bird has wants him to do.
I mean, the assumption has to be that the coach that Larry Bird hired is more or less in lockstep with what Bird wants to do. Otherwise, why would Bird hire him?
Right, but my issue is
Harper,
that...
you're overthinking this, I think.
I am clearly Bird did not overthink this one.
Nate doesn't have a history of doing up-tempo as a coach.
No.
No, he doesn't at all.
So basically, he's able to tell Bird every other thing that he wants to hear, but he can't produce the style of basketball that Bird wants to see. This is a problem that will continue to be a problem for us in the offseason and in next season.
On that note,
yep,
we should probably get out of here.
Thanks, Cheery Colson.
Yep.
And on a high note.
Well, let's get going here. Anything else, gentlemen? Any old business? Any new business?
We do have some new business.
I guess we do have new business. Give a shout out to Almighty Ballin. the almighty podcast, the NBA podcast, if you like basketball. I believe we may have some guest spots coming out this week from some of our hosts here. So I'm very excited about that. It's a pretty good show. If you like what we talk about, but more on a general stage, not just the Pacers, give them a listen for sure. We'll get a link in the show notes. But until next time, you can find us on Twitter. We are at Undebeatables. We are on Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. We are at TheUndebeatables.com. You can find us there. There, you can review us on iTunes. Really helps new listeners find our show. We got shirts for sale of the tea variety at the TheUndebeatables.com/store.
We should definitely get our next batch. We're going to do A shirts.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be awesome. Is it a Z shirt?
Those don't fit.
For a once and always coach, Bobby Sick-Leonard. Turn out the lights. The party's over.
Was that glam? What is that?
That was the Broadway edition.
It was.
Yeah, no, I went to a musical today, and it was inspired, man.
You went to a musical, and you didn't give a shout out to culture?
Well, no, I...
He was busy shouting out the race. It would have been a very strange double shout out.
Yeah. shout out to the death of culture and culture.
That's our lives, man.
It's a long week.
It's a fine line. You gotta ride the wave that Coulson rides.
That's right. Shout out to Phoenix Theater, who continues to do great things.
It was a long week. We were talking about Paul George's shirt. I remember I saw one that and I have a link to it. This is Tim Duncan wearing a shirt that says 4 out of 3 people struggle with math. This man does his own packing.
That's a good shirt.
It is a good shirt. Perfect. That's my stat of the week, too.
Yes, as it should be.